Coming up on the next episode of Around and About Chattanooga, we have a conversation with Tim Champlin. He's a local author who's written a new book about Louis L'Amour. L'Amour was one of the greatest Western novelists of all time, and L'Amour drew upon his own life experiences when writing about cowboys and the Wild West. L'Amour even looked the part of a Western writer.
What I found was a 6'1", at least 200-pound, 70-year-old, looking more like 55, sporting a bolo tie and cowboy boots, a man who appeared every bit as rugged as the heroes in his books, a man with a background of hard work and adventure. Yet he was soft-spoken, cultured, and articulate.
That's local author Tim Champlin reading from his book, The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. We have a conversation with Champlin coming up in a moment. Stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Erica Karafilis with the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of Tennessee College of Medicine in Chattanooga. Have you noticed glare with night driving? Less need for those reading glasses. Has your vision dimmed? Do colors seem less vibrant? Or things just look blurry? If so, you may have a cataract. Several things can cause cataracts, such as age, alcohol, tobacco products, steroid use, sun exposure, and diabetes. Cataracts can contribute to falls and impair driving. According to the British Journal of Ophthalmology, cataract surgery reduces the rate of falling and risk of fractures by 34%. Another journal found cataract surgery can decrease car accidents involving the elderly by 50%. If you are experiencing any of these symptoms, consider visiting your ophthalmologist, an eye surgeon, or getting a screening from your optometrist. Don't let cataracts stop you from enjoying the scenic city's beauty.
Do you own a business? Or do you have an idea for a business? Or maybe you're an investor looking to invest in a new business? Well, there's a show that you've got to listen to. I'm Monty Brule, and every Friday morning at 10 a.m. and again at 8 p.m., I'll be hosting Start It Up. Come on, get aboard the entrepreneurial train. Chattanooga has a lot going on. And remember, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. Come on.
WUTC 88.1 is a community radio station, and we want to hear from you. If you have ideas or story leads for Around and About Chattanooga, you can give us a call at 423-425-2224 and visit us online at WUTC.org.
Hello, and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. On today's show, we're speaking with an author who's written a new book about Louis L'Amour. The book is The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. L'Amour was born in 1908 and died in 1988. He became an incredibly prolific writer of fiction set in the Wild West. He was one of the best-selling American authors of the 20th century. When he died, more than 100 of his books were still in print. He received a Congressional Gold Medal and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. L'Amour was also a high school dropout. Much of his education came from the School of Life. He traveled around the world for decades before becoming a writer, working a variety of jobs that gave him experiences to draw on. My guest today is another writer, one who also writes Western fiction. Tim Champlin lives in North Georgia and writes westerns as well as other types of genre and adventure fiction. But this year, Tim Champlin did something a little bit different. He wrote his first volume of nonfiction. Voyager Press published it. The book, The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, contains more than 200 photographs and images. It's an illustrated guide to the Old West, showing the real settings and historical figures that inspired Louis L'Amour. Tim Champlin joins us to discuss his book about Louis L'Amour. Tim Champlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So your book about Louis L'Amour is nonfiction, but you're primarily known for writing fiction. We've had you on the show before talking about some of your novels, and you've written quite a few Westerns yourself. It seems like L'Amour was an inspiration to you, and I imagine that's part of the reason why you wanted to write this. So before we talk about your book about Louis L'Amour, let's talk about you a little bit. How many novels have you written?
At last count, I think it was about 37, if I count, well, 39, if I count the two children's books, which were about the same length as two short stories and little hardback books.
So you're pretty prolific yourself.
Well, this is spread over a long period of time, but I didn't mean to do this, but I actually wound up averaging about one book per year for the last 35 years or so, even though I'd write two or three one year and none the next, or, you know, would lose my publisher and then find another one and so forth. So,
how much of an influence has L'Amour been on you? It sounds like at the very least he was an inspiration to you.
I knew of him. Of course, he was world famous, but when I started writing, and I thought I aspired more to becoming an established writer more than I was inspired by his actual writings. I had read a few of his books and liked them and enjoyed them, and they seemed so effortless. The story just flowed along, and as I, you know, I could attest, that was not the way it was all the time for me. But he was an inspiration for me, and I thought, if he can do it, and he doesn't have much formal education, then I think I can write something that would be good enough to be published in the Western field. I'll never be as famous as he is, and hardly anybody is, but I want to, you know, he was an inspiration to me because he was one generation ahead of me. He was 1 year younger than my father. And I thought, I've got to aspire to do what he did.
In the foreword to your book about Louis L'Amour, you talk about seeing him for the first time, how you went to see him and you were in the studio audience during a live TV appearance. And then after that, you actually met him in person. And I really like the scene where you meet him for the first time. Would you be willing to read an excerpt from it?
Sure. Often the reality of seeing a living legend does not measure up to the expectation. This time it did. He was no thin, pale, bespectacled scribbler living in an isolated literary world. What I found was a 6'1", at least 200-pound, 70-year-old, looking more like 55, sporting a bolo tie and cowboy boots, a man who appeared every bit as rugged as the heroes in his books, a man with a background of hard work and adventure. Yet he was soft-spoken, cultured, and articulate. Being so caught up in absorbing the atmosphere of the moment, I can't recall the details of what he said about his novel. But during the interview, he emphasized the connection of his fiction with the reality of the early West. I went back to work that day with renewed hope and energy for my own writing efforts. The following year, on June 21, 1980, I met L'Amour in person. This time, he was on a publisher-sponsored book tour of several cities. When I arrived at the shopping center for the signing, the first thing I noticed was a big bus with a huge painting of a stagecoach and six-horse hitch emblazoned on its side. L'Amour was certainly wealthy enough by this time to afford such an elaborate conveyance, but I later learned Bantam Books had furnished it for his Overland Express promotional tour. The presence of this star author brought out a big crowd. Long tables were set up to hold row after row of his paperbacks, spines upward. I finally selected two volumes of short stories to buy, then got in line. When my turn came, I introduced myself, and L'Amour shook my hand. His grip engulfed mine. I told him that 3 months earlier, Ballantine Books, a division of Random House, had accepted my first Western novel for publication. He congratulated me, and I asked if I knew an editor friend of his, Mark Jaffe. I didn't then, but I met him 2 years later at a Western Writers of America convention. Because a long line was waiting behind me, we spoke for only a few minutes. It turned out our backgrounds were eerily similar. We were both born only 80 miles apart in North Dakota. We were both of French-Irish descent, and our fathers were both large animal veterinarians. I was the same age, 44, as he had been when an American publisher accepted his first Western novel. In spite of the obvious canyon between us in age and experience, he treated me as graciously as if I were a true professional instead of a beginner. In fact, he took his felt-tip pen and signed my book, To Tim, All the Best to a Fellow Writer, Louis L'Amour. At that point, he made a new fan for life.
That's Tim Champlin reading from his book, The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. And I think it's really interesting the way you describe him as truly looking the part of a Western writer. What was it in his life, in his background, that gave him the experience to write authentically about the West?
Well, he had a lot of different jobs. He dropped out of school, for what reason I'm not sure, when he was 15 years old, when his father moved from North Dakota to Oklahoma, moved with the family, and he just went out and started working. And at that time in the 1920s, there were plenty of jobs available, part-time jobs you didn't have to belong to a union to work at. You didn't necessarily have to be qualified for some of these labor jobs. And he was big for his age. He was a big guy, big boned. And he just started working at any and all kinds of labor jobs. He would hobo around on freight trains. He would hike. He would work on ranches. He worked on boats. He was worked in a lumber yard. He was, did all kinds of, you know, labor jobs. And he even supplemented his income sometimes by taking boxing matches, and people would bet on him, and he could hold his own. At 16, he looked like a full-grown man, so he could make his way. And he went around the world on a steamer when he was 18 years old, met all kinds of characters in all ports around the world. And I guess he felt a bit of desperation, too, in that, well, I only have, you know, part of a high school education. I need to get out here and work and find my way. And I think a lot of the experiences he had like that before World War II, when he was in his teens and 20s, enabled him to call on his own feelings and experiences of the rough and tumble life, you might say, when he was creating his fiction later on.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Tim Champlin. His book is The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. And let's talk about your book itself. We've been talking about L'Amour's life, and your book, it's not exactly a biography of him. It certainly has a lot of information about his life, but it's not exactly a straight biography. How would you describe it?
Well, when I started to write this, I wasn't really sure how to approach it. So I asked the editor if it would be all right if I took different segments of the American West, subject matter like how he dealt with mining and ranching, how he described those things in his books, how he described the weapons that people used, their occupations, and how he described the land and how the terrain figured into his stories.
Yeah, in some ways, it's almost like a travel book.
Yes.
A travel book for maybe some parts of the West that don't necessarily exist anymore, but it really gives you a sense of what it would be like to have lived back then.
Yes.
Just daily life back then.
I tried to limit this to the novels he wrote set between the Civil War and the break of the 20th century, because he wrote a lot of books that were set between 1865 and 1900. And by limiting that, I tried to show how his descriptions matched what really happened, or the types of dress or food or transportation that was really used during the latter half of the 19th century. So it's not a biography in the sense of being all about him, but it's all about his work and how it relates to the actual West. And his use of, as I say, firearms, food, transportation, clothing.
Because it sounds like he did do, in addition to drawing on his own life experiences, he did do a lot of research, reading, you know, journals of people who lived back then, trying to make his books as authentic as they could be.
That's right. He would go out before he was married, right after World War II, and camp out near the Grand Canyon, or sleep out in cliff dwellings, which is basically against the law now, because the Park Service won't let you do that if they're the ones who maintain the place. But he would go out and see what animals were there, what kind of terrain there was, what kind of weather, and he would incorporate all of that into his fiction, as well as just, you know, the people. It would be all the physical surroundings. So he used a lot of the real firsthand accounts of the pioneers And, you know, I think that really helped make it realistic for the reader.
I'm speaking with Tim Champlin. His book is The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. In the book, you talk about why he became so famous. And you say it seems doubtful that his tremendous amount of fame could be explained by his writing alone. And why do you think that that is, that he became such a superstar in this world to the point where he had his own tour bus as a writer?
Well, I think one of the things that could account for that was the fact that he came on the scene about the time that there was a tremendous national interest in Westerns. There were probably 15 to 25 Western serials running on television in their 50s and 60s. But that really doesn't explain it all, because he was a good writer. Depends on your point of view as to whether he was the best writer, but he certainly captured a lot of readers and a lot of the imagination of readers. He was I don't know how to account for his fame, really. I think there will always be a somewhat of a mystery to it, in that he was, not only he came along at the right time, but he worked very, very hard at it to keep his production going. He never turned down a request for an appearance in public on radio or television or to give a speech to a group. He was always there. He was always dressed as he wanted to appear, in cowboy boots, Stetson hat, bolo tie.
Really, really looking the part.
To look the part of some of his characters. Now, whether, the real Western characters didn't necessarily dress that fancy, but in the mind of the public, that's the way a Western character should look. And he was a big man. As I say, he kept himself in shape by punching a punching bag and, lifting weights and so forth. So I think there's still, to me, a mystery to the way it took off. I mean, it kind of fed on itself like a forest fire. It would just, he just became world famous, one of the best-selling writers of all time, Westerns or otherwise. He was boosted along by Bantam Books. They kept all of his backlist titles in print, which is unusual. No, most publishers, once they go out of print, they go out of print, and you just have to keep working. But all of his were available all the time, and most of them still are.
In your book about Louis L'Amour, you research all these different aspects of the West as it relates to his fiction: gunfighters, the terrain, what life was like for women back then. What did you learn that you didn't already know? Because as a Western writer yourself, you're pretty versed in the actual history of the West.
What really surprised me when I was reading all of these books — I'd read a few of them before, but not nearly as many as I read before I wrote this — I was surprised that he had the attitude toward Indians that he had. He names the tribes that were prevalent in the areas where his stories took place, but he never tried to get into detail about what distinguished one tribe from another: their customs, their dress, their language, their looks. He sort of lumped them all together, and he had a grudging admiration for them, and his characters did too, but he always considered them antagonists. They were in the way of progress. They had to be cleared off the land before the white race really could take over and, get rid of the buffalo and start raising cattle, raising crops, and advancing civilization. He realized that these Indians in the 19th century West had taken the land, or their ancestors had taken the land, from somebody previous to them, and it was just normal progression for the whites now to come in with an advanced technology and take the land from them. So, he didn't hate Indians, but he felt like it was just the normal evolution of civilization, basically. I was surprised about that.
Do you think that would be kind of an obstacle for modern readers of his fiction? Because that's not an attitude that I think a lot of people today would share necessarily.
I think that's true. A lot of people now are more sensitive to the feelings of Native Americans and the various tribes. And it might be an obstacle for people who are more sensitive now to the minorities and to the Native Americans. So I can see that happening.
The number of books that he published was just kind of astounding, particularly how many he was writing per year. How unusual, well, first of all, how many was he writing, and how unusual was the kind of published output that he had?
Well, it was unusual at that day and time in that three books a year was quite a bit, even though some of the earlier books were shorter novels or novelettes, novellas, I guess you could say, that were outgrowths of the pulp fiction magazine novels that were serialized. But when Ballantine Books, or I'm sorry, Bantam Books, asked him if he could do two a year, he said, no problem. And he started doing two a year for them because one of their other writers had failed to meet his commitment. And so he jumped in the gap and started doing it. And they saw that he could easily do two a year and asked him to do three because they could market them once his reputation started growing. So he was pretty much at it all the time, but he didn't do any editing or revising of his novels. He finished one and went right on to the next. In fact, he didn't really even plot some of his books. He just, you know, trusted to his own instincts to go with the story and think of something as he went along. And probably if he didn't know what was going to happen, certainly the reader didn't know what was going to happen. So it was more like real life in that regard.
I heard he had something like 100 books in print, not just had written, but were still in print
right.
When he died in the 80s.
That's right. He was several down the list when it came to total output. I mean, there were some that wrote under many pseudonyms and wrote 300 or 400 books, 500, but they're not nearly as famous as he was. He always wrote under his own name. He just got out there and worked and worked and worked. He was a self-made man, for sure.
It seems like in his world that he was writing, in the world that he was creating, things were fairly black and white. You had good and you had evil. And his protagonists weren't perfect people, but they were pretty clearly good. And, you know, for some readers, I think they would find that unrealistic. They would say life is never that simple. But I think that's also part of the appeal of the fiction, is a world where good and evil are clear-cut and good wins in the end. How much do you think that was one of the reasons why he became so popular, creating that kind of world that he did?
Well, we all like to, you know, identify with the hero and heroine in a book. And his heroes were always not indomitable, really, but they won out in the end. They finally, through a lot of struggle, won out in the end. They were beat up and shot and wounded and depressed and betrayed and all kinds of things, but they overcame all of these obstacles. His heroes always were upright, always had qualities that we like to think of having ourselves, but he did have a few minor characters who started out on the wrong side of the law or going down the wrong path with wrong companions, and finally, through some circumstance, they would turn it around before the end of the book. There weren't too many of those characters, but his main heroes always came out on top in the end. And I think, you know, we know this is fiction when we're reading this, but it's nice to pretend and it's nice to think of, if this guy can do it and overcome all these odds, I can surely overcome the odds that are against me, you know, in my life. So I think that's a lot of it too.
Tim Champlin, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was Tim Champlin. He's an author who lives in North Georgia. We were talking about his book, The Wild West of Louis L'Amour, an illustrated companion to the frontier fiction of an American icon. You can find Tim Champlin's book on Amazon. Just search Amazon for Tim Champlin. That's T-I-M-C-H-A-M-P-I-L-N, Tim Champlin. You'll find his book about Louis L'Amour and all the other books and novels that Tim Champlin has written. That's it for Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. Thank you all for listening.
About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.